Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
It is time for another edition of Football 52. I am Brady Hole. We've got, as always, UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. Coach, a lot to unpack today, my friend, but great to see you. As always, happy spring to you.
Yeah, missed an episode last week with spring break, and so glad to be back and doing this. And we are 1 week closer to spring practice, which our first practice will be on April 7th. So.
April 7th. I'm going to try to get out there.
Excited about that.
The weather's great right now. Something tells me, though, with the way the football gods are, you know, sometimes we announce a spring practice, the clouds start rolling in, and we might get one of those crazy days, which I know you appreciate, too.
We need.
Yeah.
Yeah. Out of our 15 practices, I think ideally we would have four or five that would be considered bad weather. And that's a phrase that our team is very familiar with. I preach it. If you want to be in FCS football, the powers aren't in the South, right? And the playoffs typically are going to go through the North. The national champion, the quarterfinalists are usually northern teams with bad weather, and not all of them have indoor facilities, indoor stadiums. So you got to be a good bad weather team to be successful in FCS football. And so, but my first spring here, out of our 15 allowed practices, we probably had 14. That was driving wind, wintry mix of slush and hail and snow, and days where we only had a half of a field because we had to shovel it by hand just to get out there. And it really did impact us negatively, particularly the passing game. So hopefully we have a nice blend of being able to work.
I hope so, too. I just keep thinking, with as mild as our winter was, we're going to be getting something at some point. We're going to get it. Just feels like it balances out sometimes. So we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know if the Farmer's Almanac supports the idea that there's some type of balance that happens over the seasons.
Right.
But if you say so.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
You know, I'm just going to hope and pray. It's like it's like my hair. You know, I just kind of hope and pray that the hair grows back in. But that doesn't work, so maybe this will work for football.
I'm one of those old cliche farm types, Coach. Yeah. Well, it was a decent winter, but the summer's going to be nasty.
You reckon?
Yeah, I reckon it's going to happen. I want to get into the tight end position. We talked a little bit about that 2 weeks ago. We talked about Brody Judd, but we didn't really get into, you know, the rest of this position group. So that's something I want to focus on today, too, Coach. But also, this Nebraska story, and I'm just kind of starting to – there was three different writers from three different outlets that combined their knowledge and writing ability to make this article. So this is some good reading here. Pete Thamel, of course, part of this. But basically, Nebraska has 18 players that are asking for arbitration hearing to review a decision by the CSC, which is the – what now? It's the – something that's supposed to monitor NIL stuff, right?
Right. There are a few different kind of bodies that oversee it, but all NIL, the important piece of information is that all NIL deals now must be kind of ratified or verified through essentially the NCAA or the NCAA's third party of choosing, and this is to move away from the NIL being a way to circumvent the salary cap, the revenue share salary cap that's now been put in place.
Yeah, it's not. You and I were talking about this during the break, and I know we talked about it during the shows. It was never supposed to be a, hey, Billy, you come here, you get endorsement deal from John's Auto Body Shop. It's supposed to be you're already here, and if you start working, you know, individually with this body shop, great. But it wasn't supposed to be a, let's go get the money from all these external forces wave it in front of them, then get them over here.
Yeah.
You're actually seeing this like at the NBA level. The Los Angeles Clippers are fighting this. Coach, I've said for years, I'm like, if you have contract and salary cap issues, what's to stop you from saying, okay, Nikola Jokic, we can't afford $245 million. We can afford $240. What's to stop you from saying, but we've got $5 million of it from all these other businesses under here. Just, you know, we'll just give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's illegal. You can't do that. The Clippers are dealing with that right now, with at least allegedly, with something they're dealing with Kawhi Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
So what they deem illegal in professional sports, this is passing off as just pretty normal in college sports.
Yeah, you're right. But these developments show that there's more awareness now, right?
Yeah.
And so for that reason, I'm excited about what's going on at Nebraska, and these players are bringing a problem to light because it really is a problem. Or let's all agree that it's not a problem, and we just become, you know, baseball or whoever can bring together the most money. I mean, as awesome as the Indiana story is from a win-loss perspective, flipping to a national championship, it was still about money. It was still about Mark Cuban's money. They still became the highest paid roster in the Big Ten for a small period of time and led, you know, in part to this amazing success. And I think you have to have a lot of pieces in place, not just money. We've seen that in professional sports where the big market team doesn't always win, you know, and another big market team wins instead because they have that that ability. But I love the idea that we would try to make college football more like NFL football, which is much much less dependent on whether you're a big market or small market team. There is an existing salary cap. Like, that doesn't even exist in baseball, but the NFL has a salary cap. The NFL has a reverse order draft in terms of finish. The NFL has the better the teams are 1 year, the tougher their schedule would be projected to be the next year, and that leads to parity. And the reason I think that parity is specifically oriented towards football is there one to two players or a handful of players are not going to make a difference on a football team the way it would in basketball. Like, you take Michael Jordan, did he make his money from the Bulls? Heck no, right? Like, he could have played for free or paid the Bulls $10 million a year almost his whole career and still been the most highly compensated basketball player, right?
Yeah.
But he was worth it. Now in football, that really isn't going to hold true. And so you're going to see that over time, you know, and maybe that's where Indiana kind of found their niche, is to say, hey, we're going after a full roster of production. We don't care about names. We're not going to go after the most highly paid guy, but we're bringing a full roster of production. We're going to pay for that.
It's just, the whole thing is really fascinating. You know, as you mentioned, with the salary cap, each school can spend more than $20 million a year. But then you have, you know, you can give direct money to the athletes now, or you can have valid business deals help get you to that salary cap. But the valid thing, I always thought was another NCAA, you know, odd thing, because how are we going to determine what's valid? I think if you're using it to get them there, that's, to me, something that's not – that's an example of not valid. I think you need to be there first, and then you're signing. The fact that we're announcing these deals on the four-letter network just like it's free agency period, it means it's elite. So I'm with you. I hope that something like that gets fixed up quickly, because that just – to me, that's what's 100% wrong with the NIL side of it.
The numbers are readily available, right? Like, the NFL players, they all register their endorsements of what it's called there. And so NIL is just another phrase for endorsement. And if you've got college football players being endorsed at a higher level than NFL football players, which every NFL team has a bigger market, bigger fan base, more ability to sell jerseys, television time, whatever. So if a company is putting more money into a college football player than they are a pro football player, that doesn't pass the smell test.
No,
and that's
no.
what the NCAA is trying to set right. And I think the Nebraska players, even though they're fighting to get that money, which probably doesn't pass the smell test, I think they're bringing it to light and bringing an important issue to light. And for that reason, I'm supportive of what they're doing.
Now, Coach, how do you – if we're talking about a salary cap, because I was listening to a station yesterday in Denver really pushing hard on the – well, do you think we're going to get to the – there is a salary cap. I just don't think a lot of people really pay attention to it because there's this money we're told is $20 million. But what's to stop – okay, you're already at your $20 million. What's to stop your quarterback in order for him to stay? He's gone out and got an extra $5 million from a bunch of businesses. Yep. But that's not counting toward your salary cap, right?
Right.
So what's to stop these schools from saying, okay, that's $20 million. That's cute. But we've got enough donors to get us to 40, so we're using $20 million in NIL stuff.
Yeah, what's to stop them would be an empowered NCAA. Right now, you've got an NCAA that's been bludgeoned in the courts for the last several years. And so now we see the pendulum has swung so far where the NCAA is just almost completely unwilling to call out the fact that teams are going over the salary cap with NIL deals or endorsements that don't pass the smell test. They're trying. They have the rules in place, but they're unwilling to step in and say, you know what, Auburn or Michigan State or whoever it is, you're doing this in the wrong way, Nebraska, right? You're doing this in the wrong way. You've gone over the salary cap with endorsements that don't pass the smell test. They don't meet market value. Here is your punishment. They're so scared to do that because of what's happened in the courts, number one. And then number two, all of the power schools that can actually do this, right? Like at UNC, there aren't businesses out here trying to pay my guys an extra $10, $20
million,
right? So I'm not dealing with this. I'm just paying attention to it. But the power four schools that actually have this ability, what they're telling the NCAA is if you step in my way, We're going to cut the NCAA out of power four football. We're going to remove ourselves from the NCAA. And the Power Four schools or colleges created the NCAA to begin with. So, you know, you can't have a governing body that was created by those that they're supposed to govern and then leave them toothless. And that's what we've done with the NCAA. So they're doing the best they can.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, as nice as it sounds, we always say things like, man, if they could just get a Roger Goodell type figure in the NCAA, well, it just doesn't work like that because the owners – like a Roger Goodell type figure because he fights for them first. Mm-hmm. The second that doesn't work and Roger Goodell suddenly is fighting for something different, there's a different priority, the owners start saying, yeah, we're not signing that. Yeah, we're not listening to that. And then they become what they really are, which is the NFL. Yeah. The owners are the NFL. They just have a mediator. And the NCAA needs a guy like that. But the athletic directors and administrations would say, yeah, we do need a guy like that, but he would be fighting against us because that's what needs to be fixed ultimately. So that would be fascinating to see if it ever came to that.
It would. And the small number of teams in the playoffs right now, that's kind of supporting this idea. If the fans ever gave the impression of like, look, if the Power Four breaks off, we're not interested in seeing that. We're interested in seeing, you know, my college, my alma mater, the greater good, all, you know, 150 Division I schools having equal access to a playoff, that's American, that's football. You know, if that were the case, then the Power Four schools would be too scared to break off on their own. But, you know, right now, you know, ESPN and the fans are kind of like they're inundated with Power Four. And so that's what everybody pays attention to is Power Four. And the Power Four schools therefore feel like we could just, you know, cut out the Colorado States and the Utah States and all these schools that are not Power Four, we'll just cut them out, cut our own TV deal and have plenty of money and make our own rules.
Well, yeah, and part of me wonders too, beyond that, you know, if it ever ultimately gets to that, which I hope it doesn't, if you're just cutting away and then you're just – Alabama becomes just a football team, you're basically renting the name and the facilities and all that from the school – but you're not like these kids aren't part of your school. They're not going to class anymore. We're just renting your stuff to use as Alabama. So
it's pro.
It would be a different kind of pride for these students. Yeah.
Right. I mean, you take the Denver Broncos. Denver doesn't own the Broncos.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's in the NFL and all the pro sports.
The Walmart could up and move the team at any moment.
Exactly.
I mean, we've seen it a lot in pro sports. I mean, we see it all the time.
Yep.
Wow. This is some of the stuff that I think is the most interesting when it comes to sports, but it's not always the most healthy. And I don't know where we're going with this Nebraska story. Obviously, this is an important one to watch because we have to get away from the inducement deals. We also have to get away from we're just using it to, we already cleared our $20 million in salary cap. Well, we've got enough NIL to just go over that. We have to do something to curb that too.
Yeah. You're saying we have to because your romantic vision of college football is there should be a salary cap and there should be some type of parity.
Yes.
And I agree. But right now, not everybody agrees with that.
Well, but even when I say like they should, we should, even if we get it done, what's to stop us from still having all those little under, you can't go over 20 million. Okay, fine. We're going to go 30 plus NILs added in there with 30. Well, what's to stop us from then doing the under the table deal?
Yeah.
Now we're over 30. We're to 40. We just do what Ed Orgeron said, we just do it in the back. We go back to the back door again for the extra $10 million to get over. Right. There's no way to really govern it, I don't think.
Well, I think, okay, as much as I like respect Nick Saban and everything that he accomplished and everything, I always go back to this. You've probably heard me say it before. Why did he leave Toledo?
Why did he leave Toledo?
Well, money.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Money, opportunity, fame, all those things, right? Like, he's not a personal friend, but coaches have done it over and over and over and over, right? But, he was winning at Toledo. He was well compensated and why did he leave Michigan State? Why did he leave LSU? Like, if he's the greatest coach ever, why not win a national championship at Toledo? Well, you probably can't, right? Mm-hmm. And so now that we have all these problems in place, there's like millions of people, college football fans across the country saying, we need to put Nick Saban in charge because he accomplished so much. Well, you know what? He accomplished so much at Alabama.
Yeah, he's not going to know what you're going through.
Exactly.
He's not going to know what CSU's going
through. He's not
going
to be about parity because he actually lived the path of let's jump to the schools with the most resources over and over and over until I finally get to Alabama. Well, yeah, he has the most national championships in history, but Alabama already had the most national championships when he got there.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
And they're paying him big money, but also the booster came in and paid for his house too. So it's like that's not even part of his contract. And he literally just came out when Jim Mora took the job at CSU and said that was a bad decision.
Yeah.
He basically is hurting a school that would be under his umbrella saying, why would he go there? There's no great resources. It's in a weird area. That's the guy we want in charge. Yeah. He would do well for the SEC and the Big Ten. Yeah. But everybody else, I'm with you on that. What a wild situation this is, man. I appreciate you going there with me on this.
Sure.
I got to dive into this story today. We're going to bring it in, bring it up on the whole show today. We're bringing in one of your guys on the show today, Coach, a guy that I did a podcast with years ago, Miles McClarity.
Oh,
is going to step in for a few minutes with us.
I love that.
He popped by with his mother, wonderful, for one of our watch parties last week just to say hello to everybody. So I was like, well, let's come on in and – it's been a while, and he's got the radio voice, man. So
he does, and he's very much a major piece, a heart and soul of what we do. And that he's going to play, he's going to contribute. He did last year on the field, and had his breakthrough and returned from cancer treatment and all that stuff. But even outside of that, he's such a great representative of what our team is because his commitment level and his work ethic is not influenced by his spot on the depth chart right now. He's fighting through the depth chart. He's fighting for relevancy on that, fighting every day. But we finally have the team that I've hoped reflected our culture, where our guys, they're not complaining about playing time, which I always have preached. Like, if you're complaining about playing time, you're not complaining about the coach. You're complaining about your teammate.
Yeah.
So stop disrespecting your teammate. Your spot on the depth chart is let's say that's a reflection of you and your teammate. So stop disrespecting your teammate. And I think we're finally there with that understanding and that maturity. And Miles is a great example of that. He has the ability to be the number one guy on the depth chart. He's fighting for that. But he's overcome so much personally. He goes about his business every day in a way that you know, everybody on the team can respect. So a great representative for our program, and I'm glad you're having him on.
Yeah. Well, be careful too, Coach, because if he tears it up, you know, we might just be, hey, as soon as you graduate, we're gonna hire you and do some radio here.
Oh, yeah.
He'd be a great representation.
Yeah, he definitely has the voice for radio.
I don't know how far he'll want to take it, but I said, well, come on in, man. Yeah. Let's chop it up a little bit. Coach, the tight end position, you've had some good ones over the years and some interesting stories, too, with a quarterback transitioning to more of a tight end. Last year we had that story. We talked a little bit about Brody Judd, the Westminster alum, but I wanted to get into kind of more of that tight end picture with you today and who kind of sticks out and who do you expect to make an impact at that position? Because that's a big one for you guys.
Yeah, it does start with Brody. He's got the experience. Brody was a young guy in a very experienced, very good tight end room, very deep tight end room last year with Fisher Clements, who's now a scholarship player at Colorado. It shows you kind of where his abilities was. Fisher wasn't even our most productive. We had Charlie Garrison, who was one of the most productive tight ends in FCS football. You had Hank Gibbs, who would come in as a multiple position player and was also a very dangerous tight end, excellent blocker. And Brody Judd found a role in that group, which will tell you, how much we believe in him. And so it will start with him. But one of the guys I'm really excited about, Spencer Sharp, is a Castle Rock kid, Douglas County High School, all potential right now. But he's 6'6", and he's 260. He's worked really hard in the weight room. We did some physical testing, like combine testing the other day. He popped a 4.4 in the short shuttle.
A little faster than what Tanner and I did.
Yeah, you guys, that was the 40. So the short shuttle is typically a tenth or two faster, but like
still going to be
would be the equivalent of like a 4.6 in the 40, which for a 260-pound guy,
for a giant human like that's amazing.
Yeah. So he has so much ability, and he's just finding his football abilities. Like, it's all potential, and in fact, he's been a walk-on, but I very much believe he'll be a scholarship player sooner than later. And so when I talk about him second, that tells you that he's on that track.
When you say he's finding his football abilities, did he play a lot in high school, or did he not play a ton in high school?
Well, small high school,
yeah.
and played a lot of different positions, and just the demand isn't there sometimes at the smaller schools for a guy to reach their potential because they can get by on height, weight, and speed.
Sure, yeah, and that makes sense.
And so now he's in a level where he's still, even by NFL standards, he's still a, height, weight, and speed. He has some advantages there. He's a big, fast guy, but everybody at this level is good. And it doesn't matter if you're 6'6 and 260, if you don't have your hands and your feet and your eyes in the right place, our defensive guys are going to expose you. And so those are the things that he's picking up now is the details and nuances of playing the tight end position at a high level, and he's making remarkable progress. So super excited about him.
He's got a good tight end name too, with Sharp on there. Yeah,
yeah,
good Bronco.
That's right. a guy that's got a ton of potential. 6'7" guy, Marwell Abram. If you recognize the last name, this is Makur Abram's brother, our starting defensive end. Marwell's He's just a freshman, true freshman. He's trying out for the team, but he has made some remarkable progress. So we're excited about him. We've added a transfer from Washington State, Josiah Cornwell, and Josiah's right now he's fighting for a spot on the team, but he's shown some nice progress in our, what we call our OTAs, our practices through the January, February, March period, and we'll see what he can do in spring ball, but he knows how to strain. He's been a hard worker. A guy we signed a couple of years ago, but gray-shirted, Brooks Hamlet. Again, another very young guy. He'll be a freshman technically this fall because he gray-shirted last year. But, he's a full-time student now, so his clock has started. But in football, if you start your clock in the spring, it doesn't affect you in any way. So he'll be a 5.5-year eligible guy when it's all said and done. But another big 6'6" guy. I mean, some of these guys look like offensive tackles, like young offensive tackles.
And big dudes.
Yeah, and they might be. That's kind of our belief at tight end, is we want a legitimate inline tight end First and foremost, make sure that we have those on our roster and can block and run the football. And then another guy, we added a junior college guy from Santa Ana College, Nathan Meek, who's a little more of a fullback tight end type of body, more like a 6'2 guy, a 240 guy, can line up a lot of different places. He was the team captain at Santa Ana College, so kind of tell you what kind of worker he is. He's been a great addition to our culture already. Excited to see what he can do in spring ball. Those are kind of the key guys right now that I would say still evaluating a lot of them. Brody has proven himself in games, and he's definitely the number one. And then, kind of we'll see how the rest of this tight end room shapes up.
Is Brody kind of standing out as one of those potential top players to look out for, team leaders on this team, Coach?
100%. Yeah, and I think he broke through with that last year. I've said this before, with Fisher Clements going to Colorado, Fisher did everything right here. One of my favorite players I've ever coached, just because of his daily approach to life and football. And he graduated from here, right? And so to be a starter, to accomplish things on the field, to graduate from a school, and then try to move on and play at a higher level through the transfer portal, I think that's what it's designed for. For all the thousands of guys that aren't happy at the place they're at, jump into the portal thinking there's going to be something good for them, and they end up making a lateral or a downward move or not having anywhere to play, those are the tragedies. So yeah. In every way, as much as I would have liked for Fisher Clements to still be here with us, in every way I celebrate the move that he was able to make. But what I'm bringing up here is there was some frustration for Fisher, because even though he dealt with some injuries last year that kind of hindered some of his overall production in comparison to what, like Charlie Garrison was able to accomplish. Also, there were times when Fisher and Charlie were healthy and Brody was going into the game and really taking their playing time, not because he beat him out, but just because oftentimes a fresher player with a different set of skills deserves a chance to be in the game too. And so there was some of that for both Charlie and Fisher and Hank, who at times were frustrated, like, man, is this guy Brody, he hasn't proven anything. Mm-hmm. I've been doing it here for years. And because they're all mature, professional type of guys, they were all for Brody having his success. But at the same time, everybody wants to be a marquee guy and a targeted guy. And so I think at times Brody was able to create some frustration in that tight end room with those three other players who were, in my opinion, the top of FCS football, those three tight ends.
It just seemed like from even last year in these conversations, you had in a good way, a crowded tight end room.
Yeah.
Where any given weekend it could be – because I know with Charlie, I wasn't thinking of him as much. Yeah. As some of, with Fisher Clements and, with some of these other dudes on that depth chart. And then look what he did. He ended up having one of those years.
We're all shaped by our coaching philosophies and practices are somewhat shaped by our own experiences. And it's kind of sad sometimes for the players that way. But, by the time I got to four-year football, BYU power football, I guess you'd call it, my senior year, I had to work incredibly hard my senior year to be a part-time starter. We had four defensive ends. I was one of them that were all considered starters. We rotated in the game even without the coach. There was a scheduled set rotation of how many starts we were going to have. Mm-hmm. And how much we were going to play during the game. And because it was a very close battle. But all three of those other guys were younger than me, and they all ended up playing significantly in the NFL. I never played in the NFL, was not good enough to play in the NFL. So that's my experience, is to work my butt off, to contribute to a position group on a winning team, and to find a way to be, satisfied with that, but work harder every day to try to improve that as well at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a critical piece of the way that football shaped me and my mental toughness. So I'm completely unapologetic about deep position group rooms. Like, hey, we've got the best tight ends in football. I love y'all. If you're going to be hungry for more playing time, great. But don't let me see any disappointment on your face if you're coming out of the game or not getting the targets that you want to get.
Yeah.
And I think there's a tremendous amount to learn from a life perspective on that. If we have the depth, we're going to use the depth. If there's not a clear separation, then we're going to use all the guys. If there is a clear separation, you definitely the most productive, best player can expect to play until we wear them out, right? Yeah. But if it's close, all the guys are going to play.
Yeah, I mean, you see that with your program too. I mean, yeah. We've seen that with guys where suddenly a guy we weren't talking about as much, oh, he's getting a lot more carries. Oh, wow, he popped a few.
Yeah.
And or a lot more receptions or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of start to see that over time, and I think that's a theme with this program. Coach, always appreciate you, my friend. I know you're going to jump on with the morning show, fellas. I did pull it out in the end. Thank you for the quote, by the way. I appreciate that. I'm surprised a lot of the local TV networks didn't run with that as a top story, but
it was a little odd. It was such a mismatch. I tried to get Tanner to make the race shorter, you know, a 10 to 15 yard race. I think he would have had a shot at.
But he
wears boots every day. His posterior chain
probably is
atrophied.
Yeah,
you know, because of the boots. I tell our players all the time, like, you can't wear boots every day. Your calves, your hamstrings are all going to shorten up. And, you know, I just don't think he's trained in the way that you've trained for that event.
That's why I pulled it out in the end. I mean, you saw the highlight, you know, we put it together for you and you watched the film.
I told him round two should be a power clean. That would give him a better opportunity, I think. You know, because you're a lifter, so you're going to take that challenge. You're going to feel good about it.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, he flips calves.
Sure.
You know, and those the short posterior chain, that's going to be an advantage for him. He's tightened up, and that might, you know, his muscle group is tightened up. That might help him in a power clean. So good luck if you guys take
challenge. Like, all ready to do these really calm challenges for at least the next, you know, year or so.
Like a crossword puzzle?
That or a free throw competition or something.
Oh, okay.
Something where it's very light.
Yeah.
Because I know he's still limping around. It's almost a week and I'm still, and I was like wanting to do your workouts, Coach, you know, come out there for a day. I'm not so sure about that anymore. I even told Miles, I said, I always talk to Coach on the podcast about coming out and doing stuff. After a very, you know, interesting race, I'm not so sure I would survive more than, you know, 4 seconds.
Yeah, you're going to have to change your mindset. There's tremendous honor in being the guy that's limping around.
That's true.
I mean, that you're living the lifestyle of a warrior. When you change your mindset and start thinking in that way, you're going to be tremendously proud of what you've got going on.
If I would have lost, yes, I would be even more depressed. But you're right. I do wear it with a badge of honor after beating him. 1-0. 1-0 right now, Coach.
I'm glad to hear that.
That's all we can do. All right, my friend. I'll let you go jump in with the fellas. And, about a week away from spring ball. So I'm excited to get into that more with you,
too.
All right, Coach. We'll catch up with you next week.
Thank you.